Okay, we are coming back to the intracellular compartment and protein sorting. So today we will talk about one, I think the second most important organelle in the cell is ER, endoplasmic reticulum. Why? Because after all the protein synthesized by the ribosome, they have to go through the ER, not all of them, but most of them, essentially all the transmembrane protein, definitely they have to go through ER to get modified, properly folded, then transport to all of the place, to the different organelles, to the plasma membrane, to outside the cell. So you can imagine all these kind of protein traveling around. Basically, the first stop, they have to go through the ER. So you can imagine the ER is a very important site for the initiation of many important cellular functions. I think the most important thing, right here, about ER is just, it's not only for the protein modification synthesis, it's also required for all the lipid biogenesis. Essentially, all the lipid are synthesized from the ER. And the third important function of the ER is we have the intracellular calcium stored in the ER. So if you study biology, calcium play a very important role in terms of signal transduction in many pathways. So the calcium release has become a very important regulatory mechanism. So from the structure, the ER is kind of like this kind of spider web-like structure. They are connected to the nuclear membrane. So here is a movie showing that the ER structure and how this ER is formed and repaired. So basically, let's see. You can only click once. Like a spider's web. Well, basically, I'm repeating that. So motor protein can move around microtubule to form the new ER there. So connecting with the existing ER network. So that's why you can expand your ER rest list. That's why we can just keep our ER activity at a relative high level. Yes, please.
You said the ER is where the protein folds?
Yes.
Do they know what causes the folding?
Okay, I will show you later. Yeah. That's a very interesting question there. Okay, let's go through what's the ER function first. So ER, so as we can see in the electron microscope, you can see there are two types of ER, right? One of them we call rough ER. The other one is called smooth ER. So rough ER is the ER associated with ribosome. So you can imagine the after protein is synthesized, they will go immediately into the ER to get modified and decorated there. And smooth ER is also very important because it's extremely important for the lipid metabolism. So most of the detoxification reaction happens here, carried out by the family called protein called cytochrome P450. So this is why I told you last time the peroxisome is no longer that important because the smooth ER can do the job partially for them. So they can do the most of the detoxification in the ER and mitochondria, so kind of spreading out this kind of activity of the original carried out by the peroxisome there. So the calcium, they have very abundant calcium binding protein in the smooth ER, so which can store high abundance of the ER calcium in the ER. So the smooth ER is extremely important for the liver and the muscle cells, because they need a lot of the lipid modification, detoxification response, and also protein synthesis. Originally, people think it's very difficult to study or separate ER, right? So you can imagine all these ER lumen are interconnected with nuclear membrane. So how can you separate the ER from the nuclear membrane? So it's very difficult to separate. But experimentally, that's a big surprise. Actually, it's very easy to study the ER because after you break down the ER membrane, they form this kind of a small spherical structure called microsome. So it's not really a membrane shape things anymore. So they break into these kind of small circle things. And these microsome, they have the similar function to the ER in vivo. So which means they can do this kind of protein modification, lipid biogenesis, calcium modification. So people can study the ER function in vitro use this microsome. So this is one of the examples just how to isolate the microsome from cell. First, you can break the ER membrane through the homogenization, just break down the membrane into small pieces. So they will form this kind of rough and smooth microsome. And then you can just go through this kind of sucrose gradient. So basically, you can see if they associate with ribosome, they will co-sediment with a high glucose. If they are smooth ER, they will sediment with a low glucose. So in this way, not only you can separate the ER from most the organelle, so you can also separate the smooth ER from the rough ER. Yes. You start with the cell.
So if you homogenize them,
yes.
Well,
that's a very good question. So you can go through this kind of fractionation. So these sediment are different fractions.
Oh.
Yeah. Their density are not the same. Yeah. Well, sometimes this is a trick we are playing in the test tube. If one gradient is not enough, actually add another gradient there just to make sure they can separate from each other. Essentially, theoretically, if you do multiple steps, you can separate most organelle apart by their density. That will be floating up, so you don't really worry about that kind of stuff. Yeah, the lipid alone will be floating up at the very top there. So if you just go through the ultracentrifugation, they can separate them. Okay, so let's go through the most critical question. Just after your protein synthesis, it's a nascent protein chain. They are very vulnerable. You cannot let a nascent protein chain get exposed to the outside because they're so easy to get aggregated. They're so easy to get interact with some protein they shouldn't interact at this moment. And they are not ready to be aligned, to be inserted to the membrane, so they have to be protected somehow. So the best way to protect them is, especially that's a hydrophobic protein, is they will be transported into the ER immediately. So after this kind of massage and the chaperone activity, then they can be ready to transport out again to the different membrane vesicle there. So a scientist has done a lot of work to understand how protein chain, after they synthesized, how they can transport into the ER. So basically, this is a simplified way of the protein translocation across the ER. You have the messenger RNA kind of bind to the ribosome. So you have this kind of nascent protein chain can go through from the other end of the ribosome. So most of the protein, if they are destined for the ER, so they have a kind of red signal, it's a signal peptide. And signal peptide will go through this kind of translocator on the ER membrane. And the whole protein then will go into the ER lumen and get processed there. And sometimes the signal peptide will be cleaved and stay on the membrane. So you have a whole mature protein in the ER lumen without signal peptides. So we will go through in detail in terms of how this process is carried out. by different molecules. So basically, they have two sets of protein very important for this process. The first set is called SRP. It's a signal recognition particle. So the function, the composition of the SRPs, they have this six polypeptides combined to a single small RNA molecule. So this is what SRP looks like. So the messenger RNA is inside this kind of protein complex. So they form this kind of shape. It's like this way. And this is a binding site combined to the nascent signal peptide of the protein chain. So what happens is this SRP can directly interact with ribosome and allow this binding group to interact with this signal transduction, signal peptide. Then SRP will bind to the SRP receptor on the ER membrane, will allow it to get close to this kind of translocator. Then the signal peptide will recognize its translocator and allow the nascent protein chain go through this translocator and go into the ER there. Yes?
Is this is it going through already before it's finished translation?
Yes, right after translation. So that's why you see so many ribosomes just attached to the ER there. So they will go immediately into the ER. So this is what this is showing. So we have two different pools of the ribosome, right? One of them is a free ribosome. It's in the cytosol. So the other one, a lot of ribosome actually associate with ER directory. So you can imagine this type of the protein, after it translate from the ribosome, they go directly into the ER. So we have a huge group of protein go directly into the ER just without any barrier there. Okay, so the SRP could be recycled and bind to the more nascent protein there. So, okay, let's see in terms of molecular-wise, what this translocator looks like. So basically, you have this kind of SRP particle combined to the receptor, and this receptor will allow the SRP eventually bind to the translocator. So what's translocator? So translocator actually now from yeast and from a mammalian cell is encoded by a protein called SEC61. So in E. coli, it's called SEC-Y, but it's the same thing there. But what happened to this kind of SEC61 complex is they form this kind of four complex, and this four complex just will become a big channel. So ribosome will bind to this translocator with the help of this kind of SRP and SRP receptor. And then the nascent protein chain will go through this channel again, go inside the lumen. So if you look at the structure of the translocator or SEC61, you will know more about how this function is statically regulated. So basically, if you look at the structure of the translocator, so they have a different subunit. They have alpha subunit, beta subunit, and gamma subunit. So among these subunits, every subunit plays a certain kind of role in terms of this kind of channel regulation, such as the gamma regulation. They can slide the alpha helix to make sure the channel is open and closed. The key of this structure is this yellow part. So there is a very small helix structure in the middle, in the core of this structure. And this is considered as the plug of this complex. So normally, if you have this alpha helix in the middle, they form a plug, so they will kind of stop protein translocation here. And what happened if you have this kind of nascent protein is, if you have this kind of SRP-mediated protein interaction with translocator, the signal peptide will bind to the translocator. The signal peptide will not only bind to the translocator, also bind the lipid components of the translocator, surrounding the translocator. What happened is this binding will push away the plug there. Okay, if you have this signal peptide bind translocator, it will push away. So this is some picture I take from a review. So you can imagine this is a very simplified model, but this is more complicated. But you have a plug normally in the middle. So you have the signal peptide bind. So you push away the plug to the sideway. So then the protein can go through. But the signal peptide sometimes, okay, can be very, the fate of the signal peptide could be very different. Sometimes the signal peptide could be cleaved. In this case, they will let the protein go through, then signal peptide will stay or disappear in the membrane there. But sometimes signal peptide will become a part of the protein, so which will expose the protein at different orientations, such as N-terminal will go to the lumen side, or the N-terminal will go out the cytosolic side. So I will discuss with you how this orientation is determined. This is one key question. How this kind of orientation is determined, because, okay, so, oh, sorry, next slide. This is a picture from another slide. It tells a very similar story. So basically, they describe different scenario. So you have one signal peptide binds, so it will be cleaved. Or you have the signal peptide will not be cleaved, so will stay on the membrane. So they will form one orientation. You have the signal peptide, it will form another orientation. So this is another illustration of this kind of plug regulation. Normally, there is a plug in the middle. So you have this kind of signal peptide binding, then the plug will be pushed away. Then you will only see the nascent protein chain going through there. Okay, so this is just roughly the idea how this signal peptide binding will initiate the movement of the plug, will allow the polypeptide going through this translocator. Then let's ask, okay, what happened if your protein are transmembrane protein? So we have a couple of questions to ask. So if you have this kind of hydrophobic patch there, so how the, okay, normally if you look at the transmembrane protein, what kind of things you will see? So you will see a segment buried in the lipid, right? But this is something, it may not necessarily be important because they don't really normally have biological function. But most important, actually, it's a cytosol tail or whatever, the lumen tail, right? Because a lot of membrane protein carry out their function by these tails. This cytosolic tail or kind of lumen tail will interact with different signaling proteins. Well, we'll carry out many different functions. So it's very critical for the protein to decide the orientation, which means should the N-terminal will be exposed to outside or should C-terminal will be exposed outside. So how this kind of orientation being determined is a very critical function. Scientists really working hard to try to figure out what's the general principle of this kind of orientation. And I will let you know what's our consensus at this moment, at least. Okay, so I discussed with you last time, we have different types of transmembrane domain protein, right? So some of them have only one transmembrane segment. So if this one membrane at the very end terminal, sometimes it functions as a signal peptide. So if you have one transmembrane protein segment, so basically this for sure, signal peptide will bind to the translocator. So we'll move away from the translocator after protein transportation is finished. And most of the time, they can be cleaved off. So you can have the mature protein in the lumen without the signal peptide. Or if you have a single passed transmembrane protein, which means you have a segment in addition to the signal peptide, so this hydrophobic patch will be stay in the membrane. So we'll have this kind of transmembrane protein now exposing to different side of the membrane, so cytosol or the lumen side there. So all these kind of hydrophobic sections I have mentioned here, they will first interact with the translocator, and they will then be pushed away by the translocator to the other membrane structure. Okay, so let's see how the orientation is determined. I have to say that I read many reviews before I teach this class, but I still don't really have a so-called conclusive statement about this kind of orientation. But most people believe if the polarity determines the orientation, which means if you have more positive charged amino acid preceding the start transfer. So the start transfer, you know, it's the first hydrophobic segment. So if you have more positive charged amino acid preceding this one, then the N-terminal will face in the side also. If you have more charged amino acid following the start transfer peptide, then the N-terminal will face the lumen. But the basically, in general, just the positive charge side will face in the side also. This is a general principle there. So you can imagine, in certain case, you can even change this positive charge to negative charge. So the protein will kind of flip over. So original the side so facing the cytosol, now they're facing the lumen right now. If you have a double passed a transmembrane protein, what happened there? But well, they follow a very similar principle. The first one will bind, the second one will follow. The first one will function as a start, and the second one will function as a stop. But it gets complicated if you have multiple hydrophobic segment, which in this case, a lot of transmembrane protein, there are more than seven transmembrane hydrophobic patches. So then it will be really difficult to know, okay, especially the C-terminal will face in the cytosol or face in the lumen, because the segment, when they insert in the membrane, they always follow the principle, if the first one functions as a start, the second one must function as a stop. So they have to go through this kind of order there. So the C-terminal actually is really determined by how many hydrophobic segments you have there. So this is, again, it's a consensus, but not necessarily applied to every single protein there. So if you have a multiple segment there, so the first hydrophobic patch normally functions as a signal peptide. So they will decide the N-terminal will face in the cytosol or the lumen. Then the second next one will function as a start. The very next one will function as a stop all the way through. So you will see at the end where is the C-terminal facing to. So this is a general principle. The first as a signal and the start, stop, start, start. So you have the so in this way they can determine the orientation of a protein. Transmembrane protein. Okay, so next question become, okay, what are these proteins doing in the ER, right? So most of the protein that go into ER is not going to just stay in the ER and execute its function in the ER. Actually, most of the protein will go out again. They will go out to different localization membrane and go outside the cell. The major function of the ER's function is, okay, they will help the folding of this protein. The folding of the protein is very critical. They have to form a certain kind of structure. You know, most protein carry out its function because they form a certain kind of structure. So that's why the folding is very important. But folding takes time. You cannot ask a protein right after it synthesizes, they will become folded in a certain way. They take time. So the cell control the folding process by a different mechanism there. I won't go through the too much detail, so you guys should read the section of this part, but majorly by two mechanisms. First, the protein will bind to a chaperone protein. So we have a lot of chaperone proteins in the ER, such as HSP70, 90. All these chaperone proteins, the function is they will bind to this nascent protein chain. So they will prevent this protein from aggregation. They will prevent this protein from this kind of wrong signal. If the protein folding is not, like say, fold properly, or they don't finish in time. Actually, timing is also important for the cell. If you cannot finish in like certain time, so this protein will be considered as misfolded protein. They will be exported out and get degraded. So it's very, to the cell, actually, it's very a strict regulated process. Okay, so the chaperone protein play a very important function in this way. And another important mechanism for this folding regulation is the glycosylation. So the glycosylation is a common modification. So I didn't tell you this part. So most of the protein after it right goes through the translocated channel, they have this kind of glycosylation enzyme waiting for them right away. So after going through the aspirate of this molecule, most time will be immediately modified by the sugar group. N-glycosylation is happened essentially to the majority of the cell. So you can imagine what happened to the cell is after going there, they will mark you. They will mark you with a sugar group there. So this is a tag of your staying in the ER. You have to have this kind of sugar group. Why this kind of sugar modification is so important? Because of this third one, this unlinked glycosylation helps proper folding in the ER, also serves as a timer. So basically, they have chaperone protein can specifically bind to the sugar-modified molecule. So this binding will determine if the protein folding is finished properly or in time. So this kind of binding dissociation will make sure the protein finish in time, in the right manner. So if this kind of protein, such as the folding, is not properly folded over the time, so misfolded protein will be exploded out to the outside, then this kind of sugar group will be cleaved, and a ubiquitin chain will be added, and then will be delivered to the proteasome, get degraded. So you can imagine this protein folding process is a delicately regulated process, and misregulation of this process can cause many human diseases. They are all just undergo these kind of intensive studies. So let's say if you have misfolded protein, or what happened to the cell? What can cell do? What kind of response they have? So we call this kind of response unfolded protein response, UPS. So next time people mention UPS, you know, it's not really only for the delivery, but it's also quite important for cell. What happened to this kind of UPS signaling pathway is they have many sensors on the ER membrane. So these sensor protein, they can upregulate this misfolded protein response by different ways. I have list, this figure have at least three possible mechanisms. They can regulate the messenger RNA of the translation of the chaperone protein. They can help the translation of the regulatory protein, the chaperone protein as well. So they can sometimes they can regulate at protein level. So this protein can be cleaved by the proteinase, and this proteinase will function as a transcription factor, go into the nuclear and stimulate the transcription. But end result is okay. They will increase the protein expression of this chaperone proteins, and also this kind of sensor for this glycosylation and all these enzymes required for this folding response. So you can imagine through this UPS pathway, so cell will have a kind of emergency response and just put more energy to synthesize these proteins to make sure protein folding is ensured. I guess that's today's do we have more slide? Yeah. So basically, this is the major function of the ER and how the protein are translocated to the ER after synthesized by the ribosome. Any question here? Okay, good.